Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Josh in Calgary texts in. Jamie and Drantz, would love to hear your elevator pitch for each team winning the first round. What needs to break right for each team to move on? I assume he's meaning just the Canucks and Preds series there. But,
I like that. Elevator pitch.
And I do. And what I want to zoom in on a little bit, pivoting off that that text, is the matchup I'm most curious about, and it's not exactly groundbreaking, but it is one that I think will go a hugely long way to deciding this series, is now I'm doing a bit of guesswork here, but I would guess that we're going to see the JT Miller line go up against the Ryan O'Reilly line.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of conversation, like, should you use the Lindholm line in that role and then, you know, create an environment where it's like JT Miller versus Colton Sissons and Elias Pettersson versus Thomas Novak, and, you know, can the Canucks pick at the soft underbelly of the Predators roster with their best players, best offensive players, while sort of sending in that, you know, grind line, I guess, of Garland, Joshua, and Lindholm. I just don't think I've seen enough juice from the Lindholm iteration of that line yet to feel the same way I would have felt about that if we were having this conversation in January and it was like the Bluger line, or the Bluger was centering that line, where I'd be like, yeah, it makes sense to throw your top 5-on-5 line out there against the toughest matchup. It's hard for me to imagine that this team is better off punting at the top of the lineup, given the possibility that with Miller, they can just win that out, that matchup outright. Like, I really struggle with that.
And
overall,
when you just look at how they've used their lines and how they've used JT Miller specifically, he's been the first choice option pretty much all year, right? To go up against the other team's top line. And he's embraced that. And I think that, like, when you have something that a player has bought into and has succeeded for the most part, I know there's been games here or there where it really hasn't worked out, but for the most part, you like the job he's done in that role.
It's worked out in 75 games. You know what I mean? There have been, like, there were a couple exceptions early in the year against tougher opponents where it was like, interesting. You know, like, maybe this won't be sustained, but over the balance of the season, I think those questions have been completely and thoroughly answered.
So that's part of the team's identity, right? That's part of JT Miller's identity. That's part of the team's identity. I don't think you go away from that in round one, right? You have an opportunity, as you said, you think you have an opportunity to win those minutes with JT Miller versus Ryan O'Reilly, strength on strength at the top of the lineup. And then you still kind of get the advantages that you were talking about of, okay, matching some really good offensive players up against the other lines for Nashville, right? Like, Elias Pettersson's line is not going to be matched up with the Ryan O'Reilly line. So you that should be a favorable matchup. And, you know, with Lindholm, Joshua, and Garland, now, as you said, Lindholm, it hasn't necessarily been the cleanest fit yet with those players, but I would still bet on a Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua combo to be able to drive some offense. So I think that's at the very least, I'm not saying it's an overwhelming advantage for the Canucks, you know, third line on third line or whatever, but it's not a matchup you feel bad about either, I don't think, if you're sending Connor Garland out there.
And so, really quickly, and granted these games occurred early in the season, and I do believe that the Predators are a materially different team now than they were at that point. But Ryan O'Reilly, JT Miller, 19 minutes and 55 seconds head-to-head this season. JT Miller and Colton Sissons, that number's at about 7 minutes and 43 seconds. JT Miller versus Tommy Novak, 9:57. So literally he played more head-to-head against O'Reilly in the club's three matchups earlier this year than he did against the other two centermen combined. And here's the thing. I would be pretty surprised if we get, like, when the Canucks are on home ice, and frankly when they're on the road too, if we get like a really hard Miller Ryan O'Reilly match, in part because I just think Miller's going to play a lot. Like, I think Miller's going to log minutes against everybody, because I would expect Miller to like touch 18 minutes 5-on-5 some games, especially games where, well, and honestly, not even situation dependent, because he's going to be on the ice a lot when they're holding a lead, and he's going to be on the ice a lot when they're trailing.
Chasing, absolutely.
So, and he's definitely going to be on the ice a lot if it's tied. So, like, JT Miller's just going to play a lot, and he's going to play against all three of the other lines. And then here's the other thing to remember. You go into a playoff series with these lines, these idea of these lines in our head. The pace of the series, like what happens over the course of a playoff series, right, is coaches adjust really quickly when things aren't working for them. It can take a period. You know, forget like a loss or multiple losses, right? You can't afford that in the playoffs. If things aren't going your way, if a guy doesn't seem like they're feeling it that night, they're going to get dropped. Like, they're going to get dropped unless it's, you know, someone you really, really need. And so sort of what happens over the course of a series is players who can't hang, especially forwards who can't hang with the pace of the series, get played out in terms of their minutes, right? They drop down the lineup on and on. And that's sort of where I think the depth advantage for Vancouver becomes a little bit more pronounced in some ways, right? Because I won't be shocked, for example, if Jankowski is a guy that maybe Vancouver can play out.
Right.
Right. And then Nashville's maybe looking at Michael McCarron on the second line. Michael McCarron, by the way, about to annoy everybody. Just like,
that's,
be ready
so
for that.
So we have from Nashville, Joe Rexroad, his radio host down in Nashville, coming on at 1:30, and that's one of my number one questions for him.
Yeah.
So who are Canucks fans going to hate in short order in this series?
Oh.
So your vote is for Michael McCarron.
Well, he's one of them because he's just like physically assertive. Yep. Lauzon would be my number one draft pick. Just because he's going to be hitting everything. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, he set the NHL record for hits in a season this year.
Right? That's pretty good.
He's going to be hitting a lot. So anyway, I sort of look at it and think of it in those terms. Like, who could get played out, right? Who could get played out by the pace of the series overall? And the thing I like about Vancouver is that I think there's 10 guys who I feel really confident won't, right? Like, I'm really confident that the top nine, whether they score or not might be a different question, right? Whether the Canucks can afford to spread out the scoring the way they have, or whether or not Garland has to go into the top six, Mikheyev has to come out of the top six, and you have to build like a line that's just to hold it together. Mm-hmm. Don't get scored online with like Mikheyev, Joshua, Lindholm, like that. I'm not making a prediction there. I'm just saying I'm confident that all three of those guys aren't going to get played out. The pace isn't going to swamp them. And then I'd add Lafferty. I'm very confident that Lafferty is not going to get played out. Nashville, I'm probably one forward short of that. I like Kiefer Sherwood a lot. Jankowski's played okay, but I don't know. So that's, to me, the edge is not so much like, well, I like their second and their third lines less than I like Vancouver's second and third lines on paper. It's more about how many forwards am I really confident are going to be able to hang with the pace of the series, and I'm really confident about one additional forward in Vancouver's lineup. To me, that's where the depth edge really shows up.
Yeah, that makes sense. The other thing I'm curious about is how much of the best, like, five-man unit versus five-man unit do we see in this game, right? So, like, Miller line with Hughes and Hronek, or in this series, I should say, Miller line with Hughes and Hronek, and the Ryan O'Reilly line with Yossi and McDonough. Because I think it's notable that, you know, not that there are other good defensemen, obviously, for the Nashville Predators, but loading up Yossi, who's such a dangerous offensive threat, with Ryan McDonough, who is such a good veteran defenseman and still playing at a really, really high level, how much of that are we going to see? How attached is Rick Tocchet going to be to getting Quinn Hughes out there to support JT Miller in those Ryan O'Reilly lines? And if they go away from that, I mean, we're talking about, you know, freeing up Elias Pettersson, freeing up Connor Garland to do some offensive damage in other minutes. But if you think you can survive kind of going up against Ryan O'Reilly without Quinn Hughes kind of being stapled to JT Miller, that frees up potentially Quinn Hughes to do a ton of damage in minutes away from those. And as we've talked about so often this year, I mean, he really has been their number one offensive driver this year.
Right. So the Predators are not like the Colorado Avalanche, where they're super disciplined and they play their top pair with their top center like 70% of the time. They're not a team that tends to deploy it. Like, Yossi, like 30, sort of closer to like 50, 45, 50% between Yossi and McDonough. And that's not too different from JT Miller with Quinn Hughes. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking about 50%. Same thing. So we're talking about teams that do the five-man unit thing with some discipline, but not, it's not a hallmark of how they play.
It's not extreme like it is with the Colorado Avalanche.
And Colorado might be the most extreme we've seen in a long time. 100%. Like, maybe since the late 90s Wings. But, yeah, they do it. It's a conscious effort. Yeah, I think we're going to see best on best. So if we're seeing that sort of thing where it's like, this is you know, the other thing to bear in mind here. Nyquist, O'Reilly, Forsberg, McDonough, Yossi versus Hronek, Hughes, Suter, Miller, Besser. Like, I think you take the Canucks five first, and in fact, I don't think you have to consider it at that great a length, but is there a huge gap there?
No, it's not as if it's a walkover. Like, right? I do think the one thing I think people are really sleeping on in Nashville is Philip Forsberg had 48 goals this year. Like, Philip Forsberg was a stud this year, an absolute monster, right? So as much as we can look at the down the lineup forwards and be like, is that guy slotted too high? Is that guy slotted too high? They have, and now look, I'm not saying the Canucks don't. The Canucks have game breakers too, but don't act like the Preds don't, because Philip Forsberg is an absolute stone cold game breaker.
Well, I also think this one like fun subplot to this matchup, I think, is both of these teams hit a lot. Both of these teams are pretty physical. And both of these teams have elite throwback power forwards who aren't talked about enough for the fact that they're elite throwback power forwards. Like, Philip Forsberg legitimately is like a late 90s, early aughts power winger. That's his play style. Okay. And JT Miller, we all know, is too, except he's a power center now.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Like, what's better than that in the playoffs? This is, in some ways, I mean, apologies to Matthew Tkachuk and I guess Jason Robertson, but, like, you know, this is sort of two guys who fit this kind of, like, mythical mold that we just don't see that often anymore. I'm going to enjoy the heck out of that.
Yeah, and I think you take JT Miller, but again, this is no disrespect to JT Miller. Like, Philip Forsberg had a phenomenal offensive season, and he's a phenomenal offensive player, right?
He's going to be second team All-NHL. Miller would be if he were still a winger.
Right.
But you know, this particular center class,
right? Pretty good.
It's like, oh, Matthews or McDavid on the second team. Like, good luck.
Yeah, it's absolutely outrageous.
Sorry, voters.
Are you a voter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sorry to you.
Yeah, no, it's hard. I'm going to get it wrong.
yeah, it's a good point about the power forward on power forward matchup. And in terms of, you know, play style, hitting, I think this should be a pretty energetic series. Brandon in Vancouver texts in, what about coaching? Brunette had the Panthers playing a unique style in 2022 that hit a wall against Laviolette and Cooper in the postseason. That's from Brandon in Vancouver. And I remember that at the time, right? They went up against the Capitals in the first round, got by them, I think, in six, but really kind of struggled to generate the same kind of looks and to have the same sort of success offensively that they were in the regular season. And then I think they got swept by Tampa in the following series as well. Now, look, that Tampa team was absolutely ridiculous. They were really, really good. So it's not as if it was all Andrew Brunette's fault or anything, but it's an interesting question. And I think more than anything, I'm just really curious about the kind of cat and mouse game between Andrew Brunette and Rick Tocchet, right?
Yeah.
Of making those adjustments quickly. Especially because, as much as, like, you're right that you have to be flexible, you have to be willing to change things on the fly in a hurry. But I also think that's tough when you've gotten here based on one very specific style of play in both instances, right? So which coach can kind of keep the core of the team's identity intact while making the necessary changes? Like, that's not an easy thing to do, but both coaches are probably going to be challenged to do so.
When Brandon in Vancouver texts in and mentions, because we've talked about special teams, goaltending, blah, 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 what about coaching? Brunette had the Panthers playing a unique style in 2022 that hit a wall against Laviolette and Cooper in the postseason. And you remember, I mean, we were on the air as that happened, and I was losing my mind as it happened in real time about their inability to break a 1-3-1. Like, I couldn't believe their inability. Like, both Washington and Tampa did was they played a 1-3-1, but with a defender a little bit deeper. And because both teams had size on the back end, that sort of eliminated the dump in option against the 1-3-1, which sort of forced the Panthers to have to get more creative in terms of defenders jumping into the play, in terms of self passes off the wall, and they couldn't do it. They just couldn't do it with any discipline across those games. The Capitals series was way closer than it needed to be, and then obviously they lost. They got swept by Tampa Bay. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a we're going into the series, and I would say I feel pretty confident that Tocchet is a weapon for the Canucks in it. I do. I think the Canucks should be given the edge behind the bench, and yet I think Brunette should be second for Jack Adams. Like, I don't know that it's fate. Like, I don't think Brunette did a good job adjusting to and figuring out answers for the 1-3-1 that he faced in the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs. But I also think it's worth remembering, like, that wasn't his team, right? He took over in midseason in just about the worst possible circumstances with Joel Quenneville sort of exiled from the league or expelled from the league. Mm-hmm. You know, he's since sort of been an assistant coach. He went to New Jersey. They won a playoff series last year, adjusted fantastically mid-series, worked with Lindy Ruff there, and now he's in Nashville, and he's had a stellar impact on the Predators. I look through that sort of resume, and I don't assume that this guy can't grow. I don't assume that there's not, like, another trick in his bag. Just because I was critical of his performance in the 2022 playoffs doesn't mean that it'll happen again. But I do think Tocchet's, you know, there's a reason he's changed everything in this market.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And in terms of the coaching impact, of course, one of the unique things about the Canucks and the way they've set up their coaching staff this year is that Rick Tocchet is running the first power play unit. We've talked at length about some of the struggles of that first power play unit. And especially early in the series, you know, you were mentioning it with Bukele yesterday, right? You do tend to see a lot of power plays and a lot of penalties early in a playoff series. This is not an imposing penalty kill for the Nashville Predators.
No.
This would be a really good time for the players, for maybe Rick Tocchet as the guy in charge of the power play, to find that edge on the man advantage that could fuel them in this series early. It's the kind of thing, you said it earlier, it can be a weapon. It's hard to say for sure that it will be for the team, and I don't even know if they need it to be, but boy, it would go a long way to just giving them that extra separating factor between them and the Preds.
Yeah, and, you know, the Predators' penalty kill has been better as they've gotten hot after the All-Star break, even a little bit better than Vancouver has been over the same time frame, but that's not the strength of this team. And so you get into, you know, I should note, though, also, since the All-Star break, while these teams sort of, everything I'm talking about in Nashville, I think the bet is either Nashville's going to be an easy out or Nashville's a different team since the All-Star break and they're going to be a difficult out. And I just find the case for them having evolved as the season goes on compelling. So just, sorry, I'll get back to the penalty kill shortly. But in terms of the special teams edge that Vancouver has on balance, 27.2% power play efficiency for the Predators since the All-Star break, 18.3% for Vancouver. So the Canucks should have the edge on special teams, but don't necessarily take it to the
back. I will say also, if you look at year-long underlying numbers on the power play and the penalty kill, their profiles are very, very similar.
Yeah.
Like, very, very similar.
Both teams can do damage. I'd say this. Both teams are dangerous with the man advantage and a little bit suspect without. And so if there's lots of penalties early in the series, you know, then it comes down to execution, because it can be an edge for the Canucks, but it can also be a weapon that hurts them. It's a double-edged sword. And that puts a lot of primacy on, like, controlling your emotions, right? On
discipline.
On being composed.
Yeah.
Especially because the emotional tenor in that building on Sunday is going to be wild, like, through the roof nuts. And not that the Predators have this, like, long history of deep playoff runs with this group, but Ryan O'Reilly's got a Conn Smythe on his mantle, right? Philip Forsberg was on that team that went to the Stanley Cup final in 2017. So was Josi. Luke Schenn's won multiple cups as a depth guy. You know, you go up and down the, like, there's a little bit more playoff experience, but there's especially more playoff experience at the top of the lineup when you're talking about the top players on each team. And so that's something to bear in mind here too. For me, the special teams edge that Vancouver has, in my view, should be real, even if it's slim. But I think it's going to come down to which team can stay composed in sort of the cauldron that is playoff hockey.
Okay, we're going to take a break here, but just a little bit of, I don't want to even really call it breaking news, but the NHL has officially approved the relocation, or it's not exactly that, but as they say, the establishment of a franchise for next season in Utah that will be owned and controlled by the Smith Entertainment Group. In addition, the board approved a plan that renders the Arizona Coyotes franchise inactive with a right to reactivate if owner Alex Morello has fully constructed a new state-of-the-art facility appropriate for an NHL team within 5 years. So that's at least the headline condition that the NHL is putting on the reactivation there.
The devil's in the details.
Very much
here,
so.
Because Morello should not have another franchise.
No.
And granting him the ability to get one for $1 billion, that could be a steal,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, what? That could be a massive, massive steal in 5 years, given where expansion fees may go in the next round of NHL expansion, given the way that franchise values have trended, especially over the last decade, but really over the last 25 years. If the details, like, if the conditions are easy enough to meet, that this ownership group in Arizona that's done this to the franchise, that's like forgot Shane Doan's banner,
that didn't even go
to the final game, you know, that has people like Paul Bissonnette calling out the way that mm-hmm. longtime staff have been treated on national broadcast, like, I mean, I get it that the league, I'm sure, needed to make sure that this could happen with some level of expedience, but it could be something they end up regretting if the conditions aren't pretty harsh, and I'll be really curious to see what the reporting is. I hope those conditions are very difficult to meet.
It feels like a bet to me that you haven't been able to get this built with a team playing in the city. Are you going to be able to do it when it's theoretical? Like, that to me makes it even more difficult, right? And I think it's a bet by the NHL that you couldn't do it before. What makes you so sure you're going to be able to do it now? That, more than anything, I think is the bet here. Now, as you're, I agree with you. There has to be some pretty serious protection built in, because you do not want him to be a member of the club again if you can at all avoid it. But it feels like it's basically the NHL saying, you're talking a big game. You've never been able to deliver. We don't think you'll be able to deliver this time either. So we're willing to put the 5-year condition on it, because we're not worried.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Fully constructed, a new state-of-the-art
facility.
Fully
constructed. So, like, not pie in the sky, not even under construction, like, ready to open. They haven't been able to do it.
Well, they don't even have the land yet.
They don't have the land. There's no infrastructure. There's nothing.
I'm just saying, there's something risky here. There's something risky here if he can pull it off. And again, the $1 billion carrot at the end, I mean, that's sufficient to potentially get a ton of different types of financing groups interested, and on and on. So it makes me a little nervous, but good luck to Utah. I think that is excellent for the short-term health of the league.
No doubt about it. All right, we'll take a break. Brendan Batchelor, his thoughts on the matchup with the Predators, up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no obligation quote. Do we have Batch on the line? All right, now joining us, the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, our pal Brendan Batchelor. What's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. How are you guys?
We're doing great. We're very excited about the game in Peg City tonight, but also very excited for round one between the Canucks and officially now their first round opponent, the Nashville Predators. So, you know, obviously I think a lot of Canucks fans had Nashville first on their list of teams they wanted to face, right, over the likes of LA, over the likes of Vegas. How do you see this in terms of the difficulty of the opponent for the Canucks and how close a series it could be?
Yeah, well, I haven't had the opportunity to kind of dig into this series as much as you guys have yet, because I've been focusing on prepping for the Pick City Classic tonight and having to get through calling that game first. But, I think based on the available options and the way the Canucks have matched up against teams like the Kings and the Golden Knights of late, it was the best option for them. Now, that's not me sitting here saying that it's going to be an easy series by any means. I think the Predators are a very different team than the club we saw the Canucks handle pretty well in their three matchups earlier in the season, and they've taken a lot of steps in the right direction, and obviously their point streak and their play since the All-Star break and all of these things lead you to believe that they can give the Canucks a tough series. But all of that said, this is still a Vancouver team that won the Pacific Division, reached 50 wins for the third time in franchise history, and is, knock on wood, assuming they get through the game tonight in Winnipeg, fully healthy now with all available players ready to roll. So, it's certainly not going to be easy, but I think it's a better option in terms of the on-ice matchup than LA or Vegas would have been. Now, in terms of the off-ice and the travel,
right,
the hectic series schedule and, you know, possible back-to-back in the middle from Nashville that could be coming here once we get the full series schedule announced, that part I don't like, because that could hurt the Canucks going forward if this is a long series. But if we're talking strictly on ice, I think it's the best opponent they could have hoped for.
Batch, do you have anything to say about the Arizona Coyotes going away?
Yeah, it's always mixed emotions, right? Like, it's, you feel really bad for the people in that market who deserved better. And I actually had an interesting chat with Connor Garland about this last week, as a guy that came up through that organization. And numerous times in our conversation about the Coyotes and about his experience there and about why things haven't worked and, you know, how bad he feels for the players and people in that organization, multiple times he said hockey can work there if they get the right people in place. And I think that's what I look at here, is as we saw the Coyotes have their swan song at Mullet Arena last night, is the ownership group there clearly had got to a point where it was a clown show, right? Like, you're playing in an arena that's the equivalent of the Langley Events Center. The team wasn't spending on the ice. The fan base wasn't, you know, being given any reason for hope and optimism because of the way the organization was being run. I know there were stories out there this year about, like, the team not paying their hotel bills on the road. So while I feel really bad for the people in Arizona that support hockey and want to see it work there, it was time that a new owner came in to take over this franchise, and that the NHL moved on from trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. And hopefully the fit in Utah is a lot better. Certainly the track record of Ryan Smith as a sports owner leads you to believe that he will immediately manage the organization in a much more professional way than what Alex Murillo had done prior to now. And, you know, from my experience going to Salt Lake City to a couple of Canucks preseason games prior to the pandemic, you know, it kind of does have a hockey culture there. Like, those games had really good crowds at them, and I was really impressed with, like, the variety of jerseys that you'd see from teams from all corners of the NHL and all corners of the hockey world represented in that rink. And while that building is not an ideal fit for hockey, you know that there's likely an investment coming of a new arena for both the basketball team and the hockey team to move into. And I believe the Olympics are going to Salt Lake City soon. And, you know, that market is a growing one. I think it's one of the fastest growing markets in the United States. So for all of those reasons, it makes a lot of sense. You just feel bad for the people who will be affected, whether it's the fans or team staff or whoever it might be that, you know, did support hockey in the desert in Arizona, even though obviously it didn't work the first go around.
Yeah, well said, Batch. It's tough because I feel like a lot of people end up dunking on the fans in Arizona, but the reality of the situation has nothing to do with the fans. They were just given such a rough go of it, and the ownership there was, at this point, a joke, right? I think we can all just come out and say it. So I think this had to happen, even as it is disappointing for the hockey fans in Arizona. So some other bit of business that the Canucks took care of today, and we'll get back to the Nashville Canucks series in a moment here, but they did extend Vasily Podkolzin, 2-year deal, $1 million per season, so nothing groundbreaking or necessarily super unexpected, but what do you see as the kind of immediate future for Vasily Podkolzin with this lineup, and how do you think he can help them on this deal going forward?
Well, I think he'll be a part of the lineup in the playoffs, you know, whether that's on a nightly basis or whether they rotate guys in and out on the fourth line, depending on how the first round series goes, remains to be seen. But at least at the moment, based on deployment and ice time, you'd have to say that he's passed some of the other guys in that conversation, like Niels Omon and Phil DiGiuseppe, in terms of a guy that you expect to be in the lineup on a nightly basis. And I really like the way he's played since he's come back up to the NHL level. You know, not a ton of offense there, although I think that's still potentially there within his game. But he's been a physical presence. I think he's been good on the forecheck. He's clearly gained the trust of Rick Tocchet in the short term, so that all bodes well for him playing at least some part in the playoffs, although as a fourth-line winger, he's like candidate number one to have his minutes reduced when we see the top players play a lot more and in more key situations. But all of that said, I like Podkolzin's fit right now with this team. And then, you know, looking ahead to next year and in the longer term, over the 2 years that he's now been extended by the organization, they're going to need him, because with all the pending free agents that they have in their forward group, you know, Bluger, Joshua, Lindholm, just to name a few, they're not going to be able to afford to keep all of them. And if you want to continue trending in the right direction as an organization, then you'll need young players or guys on cheap contracts or internal competition to help elevate things down your lineup. And Podkolzin is one of those players that will be able to do that and will come into training camp next year with an opportunity to earn a full-time spot on the roster based on the likelihood that some of the other guys that are competing for some of those spots in the lineup right now probably won't be here.
Batch, what are you most excited to watch in this upcoming series? I'm not going to make you do a tiered list, but give me a selection.
I think the goaltending has to be what jumps off the page.
No one wants to watch goaltending. Come on.
Well, I mean, either goaltender could steal a game in this series.
Why'd you ask either him that if you didn't want the answer? I know, I'd just be...
Yeah, let's be perfectly honest. You know, we talk so much everything else around the game. Yes, exactly. Morning touches, for sure. We talk so much about everything else around the game and how teams control play and, you know, who's the better defensive team and who's scoring more. And the fact of the matter is that in this sport, the team that has the better goaltender usually wins the game. And the team that has the better goaltender usually wins the series, regardless of all of those other factors. Now, that's not always true, but a lot of the time it is. And these are two of the best guys doing it right now in the NHL, in Thatcher Demko and Yusei Saros. Both are capable of putting forth unbelievable playoff performances. Both are capable of stealing games. Both are capable of stealing series. And that's going to be a lot of fun to watch, because a series that might otherwise have a lot of goals in it and be high scoring could turn into like low scoring and tense and, you know, big saves at both ends of the ice, and which guy's going to blink first. And that, to me, is what could define this series, and what makes it fascinating is we know how great a season Thatcher Demko's had. Obviously, he's looked great coming back into the lineup the other night against Calgary, and we'll see, you know, what sort of level of workload he gets in Peg City tonight. But But that to me is the big headline in this series is two elite goaltenders, and whoever can play better probably wins the series for their team.
One of the other things I think is going to be really fascinating in this series is the special teams battle. And it's easy to look at it on paper and think, all right, the Canucks power play should be able to do some damage here. But we know, of course, that it's been up and down and probably more down of late for the Canucks power play. How confident are you in the Canucks power play going into this series? And do you think they could be on the verge of a breakout at some point here?
Yeah, they've been playing better of late, and they've looked more confident moving the puck around, I think. And, you know, getting pucks to the net and trying to score off of shots and scrambles and not just passing it around and looking for the perfect play. And Rick Tocchet has spoken a lot about needing to try and create goals on the power play off broken plays as opposed to it just being the perfect setup for the one-time tap-in every time. So you tend to think that the Canucks would have an edge in that regard, but all of that said, they have to execute it. We saw them go through a very long stretch in the second half of the season where that wasn't happening. So, I don't have the Predators stats in front of me in terms of how good they were on the penalty kill this year, or how they might stack up in that regard. But that to me is to help hinge this series is, if the Canucks power play operates well, looks confident, scores goals, it gives them a really good chance to win and to shorten the series and to have a lot of success. If some of those struggles creep back in and maybe some doubt creeps in as well, then you worry about where things might go, because then you're putting that much more pressure on your own penalty kill and your own goaltender to make sure that the special teams match up as a saw-off rather than an advantage. So I've liked the power play of late. I'm cautiously optimistic about it, but it's one thing to, score some goals late in the regular season, and it's another thing to execute in high-pressure stakes in the playoffs, and we'll see if those guys are capable of doing it.
Batch, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I often am. But you've been the voice of the Canucks for a long time now on the radio, and Sunday going to be – well, Sunday, once it's confirmed, going to be your first time calling a playoff game live, I believe – while calling this team's games.
Yeah.
How excited are you? What are you expecting from that atmosphere?
It's going to be awesome. Like, I am giddy with excitement, to answer.
You sound it.
Just because.
I am positively giddy.
Why, yes, I am so excited. But I really am, because we know what happens in this city when this team makes the playoffs, and it's been so long since you experience it, whether you go out your door on a game day, people are wearing jerseys and there's car flags and everybody's talking about the game, about the matchup and about, who's going to play what role and, maybe they won game one, but the Predators look better than I thought. And all of these things, the number of people that unsolicited will ask me about the Canucks in the past week, as opposed to the majority of the season, is people pay attention to this team now that they're in the playoffs. And, there are the diehard fans that we talk to all the time, through the text inbox and the call into our shows. And obviously, guys, I'm sure you get it as well. When you're out in public, people will approach you and ask you about the Canucks. But now everybody's into it. The whole city embraces it. And then on top of all of that, you get into the building and you get the towels going and you get the atmosphere. We'll see what the game presentation's like. Well, we have, you two and the Streets Have No Name. Or will it be a new presentation that can get people fired up? By the way, I'm against going back to when the Streets Have No Name, because after the Predators turned their season around following the fact that they missed the U2 concert at the Sphere, it might actually fire them up more than the Canucks. But all joking aside, we know what that atmosphere is like. We know how big of a game changer it can be, and we've been starved for it in this market. And, your example of my situation is a perfect one. This is my seventh season calling games, and I've never called a playoff game at Rogers Arena. So I'm ready for it, and I think the city's ready for it too. And we'll see how the guys on the ice respond as a group that hasn't really experienced that atmosphere at all before.
It's going to be great, Batch. Well said. I can't wait for the games. Can't wait to hear your call. As you said, it's been a long time coming. It's going to be fun, and we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
How are you working Peg City into the broadcast tonight?
I'm sure I'll find a way, Greg.
Yeah, buddy. Let's go.
All right. Thanks, Batch. That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. And I know there's been this like quasi debate. I don't know if it even rises to that level, but like, is there buzz in the city? Are people bought in? There's 100% buzz. People are excited for this. Like, this has been a long, long time coming. And as you heard from Batch, just the number of people asking you about the Canucks, the excitement for those playoff games, the fact that they're hosting, right? That they're the favorite in the series. Not a guarantee, obviously, but it's not as if this is a long shot, you know, where they're the eighth seed and they just squeaked in and they're going up against a powerhouse. They have not been in this situation in a long time. And I think the atmosphere, for all the talk about the ticket prices and all of that, I think the atmosphere, game one, game two, for every home game, is going to be absolutely phenomenal, out of this world in Rogers Arena.
Yeah, if you don't think there's buzz around this team making the playoffs, I think you'll have a very good sense of the fact that there is by the time Sunday rolls around.
Yeah.
There's going to be jerseys everywhere.
Bars are going to be packed. The whole thing. Yeah.
There's going to be appointment. This is going to be appointment viewing. And look, it's going to be a blast. It's just going
to
be fun.
I think it's going to be a great series, to be honest. I think it's going to be a really fun, entertaining series.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I just think both teams play with a lot
Hopefully
of tempo.
Not too fun, because that would favor Nashville. But I think it's going to be a fun, physical, honestly, my gut says drawn out, too, series.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see when we make our picks tomorrow.
Sure, man. Are you going to go gutsy on me and pick Canucks in six?
Maybe. We'll see.
That's the most cowardly sports media pick.
What? Canucks in six?
Team you like in six.
What if that's what you really think?
It's fine if you're picking the road team to win.
Well, it's not as if the home team never wins in six.
No, they obviously do, but it's like...
just less often.
Well, it's like you pick a team to win in six, you're never going to get criticized. Like, have you ever noticed that no one in media ever picks the sweep?
That's true, yeah.
I hate that. I always pick one sweep a year just because there is going to be a sweep.
Yeah.
No one ever picks it. I've never gotten it right, though. And then people dunk on you. But, like, I do think it's too bad. People should pick sweeps.
Well, I'll pick a sweep, although I think we're both going to pick Carolina, New York, probably.
I'm not picking both to be sweeps.
No, Carolina and the Islanders.
I'm not picking that to be a sweep.
Oh, all right.
I think the New York Rangers are more likely to sweep the Capitals.
All right. I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we take a break, and as mentioned, we're going to speak to Joe Rexroad from Nashville in the final segment of the show. Time for the Abbey Farm Report. The Abbey Farm Report, a presentation of David L. Young of Dexter Realty. The Canucks, the Vancouver Canucks, wrap up their regular season tonight in Winnipeg. The Abbey Canucks wrap up their regular season this weekend, Friday and Saturday, in Abbotsford. They host the Calgary Wranglers. It's Fan Appreciation Weekend, so it's going to be a really fun time to go catch the Abbey Canucks. Both 7 o'clock start times, again, Friday and Saturday. You can get tickets. I think it's going to be a blast at those games. And in terms of the stakes, what's going on after the regular season for Abbey, of course, they have clinched a playoff spot, but they're in this tight group of teams that could all kind of jockey. There are still jockeying for playoff positioning. So right now they're fifth in the Pacific Division, which I believe means they would start their first round playoff series on the road against Colorado. But they're only 2 points back of Colorado in the standings. Colorado also has two games remaining. So depending on how the results go in these next couple of games for Abbey, they might be able to jump up to fourth and get home ice in that first round. But either way, it's the Abbotsford Canucks wrapping up their regular season with a couple of home games against the Calgary Wranglers in Abbotsford this weekend. The Abbey Farm Report brought to you by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit homesbydavidlyoung.com. Joe Rexroad from Nashville up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast, and don't miss an episode.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strance. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit jampro.ca. Joining us on the line right now, we have from Nashville. He is the co-host of Robbie and Rexrode on 102.5 The Game in Nashville. He is Joe Rexrode. Joe, thanks very much for doing this today. How are you?
Great, thanks. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're very excited for the playoffs to get started. We now know officially that it will be the Canucks and the Predators in round one. You know, just to start off, what has been the kind of fan reaction in Nashville from Preds fans to the team now officially meeting the Canucks in the first round?
Well, I think, first of all, I think that's what people preferred to Dallas down the stretch, just because Dallas has been playing so well.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it kind of, I think ask a Preds fan a month ago and they probably would have said Dallas, you know, but now they're goaltending really good. I mean, everything's, you know, going well with them. But yeah, nothing's a great looking matchup for the Preds, obviously. And they did not play well against the Canucks when they played early in the year. But a lot of it also is, you know, the Preds, they didn't make it last year after a long streak of making the playoffs, but for the last few years, they've kind of limped in and they kind of been in the mushy middle. And so fans have kind of been disillusioned. This team is exciting to them because, you know, it is a new era with, of course, Andrew Burnett coaching, Barry Trotz at GM. Not really a young team per se, because Trotz brought in some veterans like Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Shen, Gus Nyquist, but there's excitement that this is kind of a new era, and there's just more anticipation for this postseason than there's been in quite a few years around here.
What happened, in your view, to change the way the Predators were able to attack teams in the second half? If you had to give one reason beyond the U2 concert for why this Predators team is different than the one Canucks fans saw earlier in the season, what is it?
Yeah, I really do think it's just like the system finally kind of taking. I mean, one guy who, you know, I think these teams are going to end up with the top two for the Jack Adams, the top two for the Norris. And, you know, Roman Josi, first 6 weeks, first 2 months compared to second half, totally different. And it's, I mean, he was asked to do very different things. You know, he's always been the guy who skates the puck up. And this is a different system. It's get the puck to the forwards immediately, everybody, and then you join the play. And so, I mean, I think a lot of things with the system can be traced to that. And once it kind of took, they really took off. And then you got some individual storylines too. I mean, I think this is the best top line the Preds have ever had, with Ryan O'Reilly centering Philip Forsberg and Gus Nyquist. Gus Nyquist is having a career year. And, you know, you get some guys like Jeremy Lausanne, just set the record, single season record for hits, who really just flourished in this system and has been a dynamite player for them. So, but if I had to point to one thing, I think this system is effective, but it took them a while to get it.
Yeah, I think you're bang on about the, you know, top two in the Jack Adams, in Rick Tocchet and Andrew Brunette in this series. And, you know, it's interesting because Rick Tocchet has really remade the Canucks' defensive identity from being just a mess in their own zone last year to being one of the best in the league this year. And Andrew Brunette, of course, has worked wonders with the offensive end for the Nashville Predators. What is it specifically about how Andrew Brunette has them playing? Is it just a mentality thing? But what has he done to kind of get them playing like this? And why did it take maybe a little bit of time for it to click during the season?
Yeah, well, it's definitely, you know, I mean, it's a lot more aggressive than, you know, how they played under John Hines previously. And it's, you know, it's just very much pressure the puck, control the puck, and there is gambling involved in that. So you have to be connected and you have to be precise and you have to execute. And look, they still, and they give up chances because of that at times. I mean, they're willing to do that to some extent to be really aggressive, you know, somewhat in the neutral zone, but, you know, really aggressive all over the ice, really, in terms of just attacking the puck. So, you know, it's just – I just think it was very different for some of these guys. Actually, Lausanne is a guy who who kind of played in a system like this previously, so maybe it took for him easier. But, you know, I mean, it's basically, I mean, if you talk to Brunette about, you know, his heritage as a coach, I mean, you know, this is very much Joel Quenneville and the Blackhawks and what they were doing, and a lot of people were copycatting a decade and 15 years ago. It's just that, and I think a big question was, like, can this team, does this work with this roster? Because it's not a very fast roster. But he decided to go with it and say, you know what, I'm not going to half install a system. We're going to go with it and see where it takes us. And it worked out pretty well for him.
The other interesting thing, and you mentioned it about this Preds team, is what they did coming into this season, right, with Ryan Johansson out, Matt Duchene out, and then, as you said, bringing in veteran character guys like Ryan O'Reilly, Luke Shen. So, you know, big changes on the ice tactically in terms of the system, but then big changes in terms of the culture as well, started by Barry Trotz. From your perspective, how much has the culture changed on this team, and how much has that influenced the way they've performed down the stretch?
Yeah, it's been big. You know, it's interesting because I wouldn't say it was a bad culture before. You know, like Roman Josi's a really good captain, and I mean, they've had a good locker room. Shoot, these guys still like Matt Duchene. He has a lot of friends on this team, but I think it's, you know, Barry Trotz uses the term serial winners. He wanted guys who are basically obsessed with winning and guys who have had their names on the cup. And you know, with Duchene, I mean, look, he famously made the line. He said the line when he came in and they bought out Duchene, you know, we don't want people who want to retire to Nashville. I mean, it's no secret who he was talking about. And, you know, with Ryan Johansson, it was more for him that his game is eroded. But with Duchene, who has a ton of talent, it's just, again, it's not like he was a bad guy in the locker room, but it was, they wanted more. They wanted the guys who were leading the charge, the best players on the team, to be more like Ryan O'Reilly, right? Like guys who we all know would, you know, take a puck in the face if it means a playoff win. And that's really what it comes down to. So I do think it's made a difference. Again, like Forsberg, Josi, they have some strong, I mean, they already had Ryan McDonough, who's a guy like that. So it's not like it needed like some huge overhaul, but I do think those guys have come in, fit in seamlessly, and it's good for, in particular, the young guys on this team, you know, to sort of follow guys like that as opposed to a Duchene.
As you consider this matchup overall, what's the keys, like one or two things that the Predators are going to have to achieve if they're going to prolong this series or advance?
Well, you know, the power play numbers look pretty good for them overall, and they finally have got it going. Although I think they went like 5-for-6, like against like the Blackhawks and Blue Jackets to kind of inflate the numbers, but it's really been inconsistent, and it's been a struggle for some stretches this year, you know, and that's to me, you know, obviously a huge deal. Like they've got to be at least close to even in special teams. So, I mean, I would go with that. And look, I think obviously Vancouver, as we've watched from afar, knowing that, you know, Demko's coming back, that's going to make a huge difference. I mean, I think Saros has to outplay him. You know, I mean, UC Saros, and this is UC Saros' worst full season. You know, his numbers are the worst he's had of his career. Now, if you look at early versus late, kind of the same thing with everyone on the team. It got a lot better. He looks more like UC Saros now, but I mean, he's going to have to steal a game or two, right? So, I mean, I would go there for sure. He's going to have to be spectacular, I think, for the Preds to actually win this series.
Joe, one of the great things about the NHL playoffs, every series, there is typically a player, maybe two, on either team that probably not a household team. Maybe the other, you know, fans of the other team might not think about them a lot, but one or two games in, all of a sudden, they hate that player. They are under their skin, and they absolutely cannot stand that player. Who are the candidates on the Nashville Predators that are really going to get under the skin and be public enemy number one here in Vancouver?
Yeah, gosh, one of the best things. So many great things about the playoffs, but I love that aspect. Well, this works perfectly. You know, on my radio show, every time I write something in The Athletic, I always make sure to, you know, to promo. So tomorrow I got about 1,900 words coming on Luke Evangelista. And at the Athletic, and Luke Evangelista, rookie forward, he's going to be a really good player. You know, 16 goals, I think 39 points this year. But he's a guy who's, you know, 22, youngest guy on the team. He's going to be really good. But he's also, you know, he's kind of a slippery little player, and he talks a little trash out there. So he's not your classic agitator guy. But I, you know, he's kind of like the pretty boy thing going on there. And in fact, his nickname is Pretty Boy Vincenzo, as a matter of fact. So, Luke Evangelista, I think that's a guy, and that's a huge, you know, his line with Tommy Novak, like if the Preds are going to get any secondary scoring, it's probably from that line. So that would be one. And I'll go with Lozon. He's, again, like I said, I mean, he hits everything in sight, and he's got a little bit of sandpaper to him, a little bit of nasty snarl to him as well. So I think he's got a chance to be very disliked by Vancouver fans.
All right, I love it, and I'm looking forward to those 1,900 words on Luke Evangelista.
You know I'm here for that.
Yeah, my trans's face lit up at the mention of that. And I'll give you, if you want to pass along to your listeners in Nashville, I'll throw out a name, Nils Höglander. Undersized but scrappy, chippy, plays with some edge, likes to mix things up. So that's a potential to really annoy Preds fans. Hey, Joe, really appreciate the insight. Fun to do this, and hopefully we get a great series here.
I can't wait. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. That is Joe Rexroad, again, writer for The Athletic and also co-host on ESPN 102.5, The Game, down in Nashville. Wasn't expecting to hear the name Luke Evangelista brought up in that way. You know, you think of him more as that offensive, as he said, that kind of crucial secondary scoring for the Nashville Predators. And it's funny because I think it was last season when the Preds came through. I don't think it was his NHL debut, but he was very early in his NHL career, and he was playing for Nashville. I think he scored a goal or even two goals in that game, and people were like, who the heck is this guy? Luke Evangelista? Sounds like a made-up name. Where's he coming from? But now he's a significant part of what that team does behind that first line.
So the London Knights, for a long time, were such a deep team that taking just a London Knights second liner a little bit late in the draft often worked, because like Rob Thomas is buried behind all these other star players, right? Evangelista, there was the additional pandemic complication, but so he's another one of the Wyatt Johnston tier of like OHL guys that didn't play. You know, you don't get the chance to rise up the draft board like he might have if he'd gotten a playoff run before he was selected. So anyway, I'm a big fan of his game. I want to talk about Höglander, who you just brought up. So, guy's, 22 now? I've got it in front of me. He's 23. Turned 23 in December. And his potential to be a super annoying playoff guy. Keep your head up for Nils Höglander, which definitely the Predators have to do. You saw him mix it up all throughout that Calgary Flames game. You see it all season.
He was getting tuned up.
Yeah. And he's got some, let's just say it. He's got some dirt in his game.
Yeah. He plays on the edge, 100%.
He goes way over the edge sometimes. He hasn't much in his NHL career but go check out Höglander elbow from his SHL days, and you'll get a sense of what I mean.
Yeah.
There's some wild card to his game. So he was drafted 5 years ago now, right? Which makes him 23. And I just wanted to bring this up to you. Do you know how old Brad Marchand was in 2011?
23.
Five,
oh, wow.
5 years after his draft year. So spent a bunch of time in the queue. He played his overage season, et cetera, for the Halifax Mooseheads and represented Canada at the U-20s a couple times in a row. Debuts. So this is Höglander's path to the NHL was so significantly shaped by the limitations of COVID that it's a little bit different, right? But he comes in 59 points in 79. He gets a full AHL season. The next year, he's a point-per-game guy in the AHL and gets blooded with 20 games in the NHL. And it's his third pro year, 10-11. He's a 40-point guy and then goes off in the playoffs, 19 points in 25 games, and we all know what's become of him. His late career glow up to being because Marchand was a good, gritty, annoying second line player.
One of the best wingers in the league.
One of the best two-way wingers in hockey. And then sustained it well beyond
his normal prime.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of outlier stuff. But Höglander basically spent his draft plus one season in the SHL and played really well given his age. Then that draft plus two season, plays 23 games for Rogla, 14 points, which is exceptional for a 19-year-old player. 27 points in 56 games. We all kind of know what happened next. He sort of bounced between the NHL and the AHL. Boudreaux. So instead of Marchand, who got to like the Q, dominate, right? The U20s, dominate, wear a letter. The AHL, get comfortable over a full season. The next year, dominate the A. Then come, like, Hoglander's been all over the map. And yet you come down to it and it's like, despite the sort of overall lack of American League, like the lack of a linear path through the American League, relatively similar scoring profile, right? 0.71 mm-hmm. versus 0.81. And when you look at Marchand's first, you know, few hundred NHL games, I mean, you're talking about a guy who had like 42 points across his first 100 AHL games. You're talking about a guy who had 91 points across his first 150 NHL games. And with Hoglander, you're talking about a guy who's, you know, 90 across 220, but a lot of those games were like fourth line.
Yeah.
Now, again, Marchand's been an outlier for a decade now, a decade and a half. But we are talking about a 23-year-old player here who's driven play, scored goals at an elite clip, right? 36 points in 79 games, the same season that Marchand had 41 in 77. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying it's not fate by any means that Hoglander's going to level up and even become like a top-line caliber player, right? Lots of people aren't sure that he has that level of offense in his game. His shooting percentage was super inflated this year, blah, 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 blah. But in some ways, you go into the playoffs and you kind of make your own fate. You know what I mean? Like, there is a world where we're talking about Nils Hoglander in completely different terms in 2 months than we are now, just like we're talking about him now in completely different terms than we were in September, right? Where people were wondering if there was like a lot of Canucks media people, a lot of Canucks fans who thought this was just a guy.
Well, and I think there was, I mean, I know they signed him to the extension, but would it have shocked people if he had been traded, even like in training camp?
No, not
at all.
Absolutely not.
Right? That, like, that seemed
in
very
season,
much on the table.
In season, if they'd swung on something bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he eventually was at too high a level, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, there was definitely a window, it felt like, where Hoglander's Canucks future was uncertain.
That's bad. By the way, the Hoglander could be the new Marchand take, by the way, which I know it's not exactly what you're saying, but bear with me, is the perfect take to have Canucks fans doing, like, you know, the Larry David gif where he's can't decide if he's disgusted or happy. Well, I like the pro Hoglander side of it, but I don't like Marchand. This is a tough one.
Well, and look, this is that would be the like best possible case scenario comp. But I don't think it's an outrageous one, given the season that Hoglander just put together, right? The fact that he's going to be a 40-point guy with, like, no offense coming on the power play. You know, at this point, he's sort of at the same stage that Marchand was, and then Marchand made his name with what came next.
Mm.
And I think that's more than anything what I'm talking about. You know, we were joking about, or not joking about, we were tearing and talking about, like, which Canucks player could be your unexpected breakout guy, and we kind of didn't get into Joshua and Hoglander and on, but, I mean, there's a real, reputations are made. Reputations are made in over the next few weeks, and as much as a lot of Canucks players have, like, done XYZ or whatever you think of them, like, the rapid nature of how the conversation changed once the playoff results start coming, just like prepare yourself for it, because conversations are going to shift wildly here.
And I think with Hoglander and Joshua, both of those players, you know, obviously very different players, but I think the key thing with them, and I think why we didn't include them in the, you know, potential breakout player conversation, is the Canucks need them to be really good, right? Like, Nils Hoglander needs to be an effective line mate for Elias Pettersson, who's contributing offense. Dakota Joshua has to still have that chemistry with Connor Garland. And look, can the Canucks beat Nashville with, you know, one or both of Hoglander or Joshua not popping? Yes. But can they go deep? Can they go in a long run without those guys giving them moments, producing at a certain level? I don't think so. You look at where they are in the lineup, and, you know, we're talking about Pugh Suter and Ilya Mikheyev in the top six, but Nils Hoglander is there too. I think he can do it. As you laid out, right? He's had a really strong year. He's a really good player. He's always scored at a good level. So I don't think he is completely, out of place in the top six at all. But it's still something he has to go out and do. You know what I mean? And I think if we were doing this, if we were doing Predators talk in Nashville, we would have people texting in being like, oh, I don't buy Hoglander in their top six, right? I don't buy Pew Suter in their top six. So there's still a question mark there. And I think he needs to really step up and be that type of player for them to go on a deep run.
Just really quick, because I know we're winding down. With Podkolzin signing today, he's now got his second NHL contract, right? Nils Höglander was re-signed to a second NHL contract and looks like a player. 220 mm-hmm. games played, now 90 points, playing a top six role for this team when they get back to the playoffs, right? Kepin was unsigned. Focht ultimately was signed, but no longer with the organization. Artur Seelovs. Did I specify this is the 2019
no,
NHL draft?
No, you didn't. I was like, why are we talking about Kepin and
I just want to go through the 2019 okay. NHL draft because it's of interest to me. Seelovs is in that class. McDonough's in that class. Plashek didn't really work out. Kosmar sort of waylaid by injuries. Those are sixth and seventh round picks. Jack Malone is sort of done his college career, and we'll see if the club signs him, some rumblings that may happen. That's looking like a pretty impactful class.
Podkolzin, Höglander, Seelovs?
Yep. And then with potentially a couple of dart throws still out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, in McDonough.
McDonough yep. and Malone. McDonough having a strong second half of the season. You kind of draw a line after that draft class for a variety of reasons, right? You had Judd Brackett's departure and meaningful changes to the Canucks scouting staff, the pandemic, on and on. Canucks seem to have really gotten a fair bit of value out of that class, that class, which was drafted, by the way, in this city.
Mm-hmm.
And the Canucks haven't gotten an NHL game from a draft pick since, which is, like, obviously... The last 2 years, you can't judge because those guys are so young.
A huge part of that is the next two drafts, they had one combined pick in the first two rounds, and yep. that was Danila Klimovich in 2021. No first or second in 2020, no first in 2021, also didn't have a third or a fourth in that draft.
Yeah, no.
So, like, that's when they really kicked into, like, extreme draft pick deficit mode, yes, 2020 and 2021.
Which is too bad because, man, an additional body or two Oof. Would be useful right now. Huh? But anyway... I just thought it was interesting to spotlight that, especially on the day that Vasily Podkolzin signs, because that's Seelovs picking up points in all four of his Canucks starts this year. Höglander and Podkolzin both probably going to be in the lineup for this team in game one of the mm-hmm. playoffs. I mean, those returns have been helpful, not key, but helpful. In Vancouver, getting back to the top.
By the way, really quickly, just some further details on the Coyotes to Salt Lake situation. This is via Greg Wyshynski at ESPN. One, he says that the reactivation of the Coyotes, if Morello builds the arena, will not require approval by the NHL Board of Governors. That's direct from Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly. He says Alex Morello has already been approved as an NHL owner, so... He doesn't need to get voted in again. He just needs to build the arena and whatever other scenarios or conditions might be there to get the team back. And then the other interesting one, the new team will be called Utah rather than Salt Lake City. And this is from Wish. Don't expect a mascot and official team nickname until season 2 of the franchise. NHL wants the team to have plenty of time to get it right. So it could just be Utah. It could be a Washington football team situation.
The Utah hockey team.
Yeah, the Utah hockey team.
I'll be honest. I'm desperate. For more teams to adopt that. The nicknames are silly for the most part.
No, they're fun.
Vancouver Hockey Club?
Eh.
That's cool.
Boring. And
then, no, because you still call them the Canucks.
I know what you mean. It's the European model.
Yeah, it's Washington football team, one of the coolest team names of the last 20 years.
All right, so that's the latest on the Coyotes to Salt Lake.
Utah wagon, baby. Make it happen.
And we will be back. We'll make our picks. We'll dive into the rest of the playoff matchups as well. Game one, likely on Sunday, not official yet, but we'll break it all down tomorrow here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.